This is the Kona Edge, the home of Ironman triathletes who dream of qualifying for the World Championships on the Big Island.
Welcome onto this edition of the Kona Edge. I am Brad Brown. It's good to have you with us. Thank you so much for joining me today. And coming up on today's podcast, I get to share another phenomenal Ironman story. And this is someone who's been around the sport for a long, long time. Took quite a big break in the middle of his career, but he was one of the forerunners and has some incredible stories to tell. Raced as a professional in the early days and came back and raced as an age grouper last year. And boy, did he smoke the Ironman World Championships in Kona in 2017. So really looking forward to sharing Rob Burrell's story with you today. I hope your training is going well for whatever it is you are training for. I got back from a run a short while ago. Legs are feeling good. And it's just amazing how much consistency helps. Definitely nowhere near as fast as I should be, but ticking over. And I'm just really chuffed. I'm getting some decent runs in. Nothing major, nothing too long. But just trying to be consistent, which is an absolute winner. Make sure you stick around towards the end of the show as well. I've got some exciting news to share with you about something I've been working on that's moved along pretty quickly. But that's all coming up next. Today's Coach's Corner is brought to you by My Training Day Triathlon Academy, which was started in 2006 when Claire and Kent Horner realized their passion was helping other athletes reach their goals. My Training Day is home to online coaching, squad training, an online store, bike fitments, and nutrition assessments. What began with a handful of athletes has now grown exponentially, and Kent and Claire, along with 9 other My Training Day coaches, coach more than 280 athletes both nationally and internationally. My Training Day affiliated with Joe Frill in 2014, allowing access to a world of knowledge from one of the world's best-known original coaches. My Training Day makes use of tools such as Best Bike Split, Trainer Roads, and Training Peaks for power analysis, as well as Coach's Eye for video analysis. Their passion lies in helping others realize their full potential and reach their goals. My Training Day caters for any athletes from your complete novice right through to your elite athlete. To find out more about My Training Day Triathlon Academy, simply head over to mytrainingday.com, or to find out more, head over to thekonaedge.com/coaching. You can check them out there, as well as all our coaches in the Coach's Corner. And if you are a coach or have a coaching business and you'd like to be featured on the podcast and the website, simply head over to that URL, scroll right down to the bottom and get all the details there. That's thekonaedge.com/coaching. You're listening to the Kona Edge. I am Brad Brown, and it wasn't too long ago that we headed to just outside Amsterdam to catch up with someone here on the Kona Edge. This time, we head to the Netherlands again to a small town called Overberg. And funnily enough, last time we were there, it was a South African we were speaking to, but not this time. We're chatting to Rob Burrell. Rob, welcome onto the Kona Edge.
Thank you. I'm proud to be on your show.
Rob, you've been around the sport for, I don't want to give your age away, but you've been around the sport for a while. Triathlon and athletics and sport have been a really big part of your life for a long time.
Yes, for the last 50 years, I've been crazy about competitive sports. So it's quite a long time, yeah.
Let's talk about your backgrounds and sort of what sports you have been involved in. Tell me a little bit about sort of, have you always, as a youngster growing up, were you very active? What sports were you involved in?
By some strange coincidence, I ended up in a swimming club. This was because my parents wanted to teach me how to swim. And that was a big problem. I was very scared of the water, and in Holland we have a lot of water, so it was a problem for them to not me not being able to swim. So they asked around, and they finally found a swimming club close to where we lived, and they put me on it just to learn the basics of swimming and get my first swimming grades. And somehow I liked it very much, and I got over my fear of water and stayed with this club. And although it was not my best talent, I had a good time there. With my friends were there, and I thought it was a nice sport to be in. And I didn't have any ambitions to ever become a champion, but just to stay healthy and fit, it was a great start for my sporting career.
I find it interesting. I mean, were there any other sports? I mean, football is massive in the Netherlands. Did you play football growing up at all?
Well, only on squares and at schoolyards. But I found out very quickly that this was not the sport that I was made for. It was too explosive, too short, too much fine coordination, and I was more interested in endurance sports from the start. So running, I found out, was more my thing. With our swimming club, we did a lot of running events, and cycling was not something I had any ambition in, but everybody in Holland rides a bicycle, and as a kid, you're always late for school. And later on, I calculated, I was from very early on, I was like 12 years old, I was riding a bike for almost 2 hours every day. So that is a good background for triathlon.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a fantastic base. We were actually talking about it in the last week on the podcast here with another athlete, Rebecca McKee, who was exactly the same. As a youngster, just spent tons of time on a bicycle, and it's really paid off in her triathlon endeavors. When were you first introduced to the sport of triathlon, Rob?
This was in 1982. That was when I first heard about it. A group of older athletes came to our swimming club to prepare for Hawaii, and they started swimming with our squad, and it looked like they were not going anywhere at all. So from the beginning, I thought I could be a better triathlete than they were. So that kind of triggered my interest in the sport. But on the other hand, the distances, I thought it was crazy. I mean, as a swimmer, most of the races I did were maximum 5 minutes. Once a year, maybe I swim a 1500 meters, but that's it. So in 20, 18 minutes, I was finished, and a race for 9-10 hours, which was the winning times for those years, that seemed crazy. So I thought, well, the combination of three sports would suit me well, but the distance is not. But then came a rowing club in Holland, and they wanted to celebrate some 50 years of their existence, and they thought of some hilarious sport, the triathlon, to start to celebrate that. And they invented a mini triathlon for a 1 kilometer swim. It was, I think, 30 kilometer bike ride and a 14 kilometer run. So straight away, we with a whole bunch of swimmers, we entered the race, and we thought it was great.
Did you know straight away after that triathlon that this was it? You were going to do this for the rest of your life?
No. I still thought this was kind of some fun thing that would come maybe once every couple of years, and there would be an Ironman race in Holland also. But this was, I did have no ambition to do it, and I thought the real pros from the US, like Dave Scott and Scott Tinley at that time, and the Puntes twins, they were all professionals that were way out of my league. So I thought it was just fun to do it once a year if it came on my path. But I had no ambition to ever become a pro. If it was, I didn't even think there were pros in this sport. So I did 2 years of these little races, and they became more and more popular. So after the first year, I did another year, and I did 3 races just to be in it and to be part of it. And I thought, well, this is there are more of it, and so maybe. And I won all of them. So I won the first four races I did in, and they were only minor races, nothing important. But I thought, well, I looked for some sponsoring, and I wrote some letters. I didn't hear about it for months. And then all of a sudden, I got a phone call from the Nike importer in Holland, the Nike dealership. And they said, well, come by and we'll talk to you. And we got your letter, and it's very impressive. And I thought, well, I probably get some shirts and a pair of shoes, and they sent me off and asked me to come back with the results. But straight away they came with an whole offer with a professional team, cycling, bicycles, training camps, the whole charade was on it. And I thought it was too great to say no, but the condition was that I had to do an Ironman by the end of the year, by the end of the season. And I thought, well, this is impossible for me, but I take what I can get. And they kicked me off before that event. But as that event came closer, I started to be more confident, and I had more experience. So I went in it. I came third in the classic race in Almere in Holland, which is the oldest Ironman outside of Hawaii. And as a bonus, the sponsor said, well, we take the whole team to Hawaii 6 weeks later. So then I went to Hawaii. This was 1984. And I thought, this is too close to the first Ironman, and I thought I'll just take the holiday, like I took the whole package of sponsorship, and see where I get. And I was more relaxed than ever, and I came out of the water with the lead bunch, with Dave Scott and Mark Allen and Tinley and all these guys, and I was on the bike, and I moved up, and all of a sudden I was in third place, and cameras around me and helicopters, and I thought, well, this is something I would like to see more. And after that race, I finished fourth, and this was basically the final push for me to realize this is a great sport, and I want to be part of it for a long time.
I love that, Rob. Racing Ironman and particularly Kona in the 1980s. I mean, we see the videos and we see the footage, and it looked like an incredible time. The sport has changed so much, particularly now. It's gone very commercial. But those days in the 80s, that was, in my mind, probably the best time to be racing on the Big Island. Tell me about what was it like? I mean, I can't even imagine what it must have been like.
Well, the heat is the same. The asphalt and the tarmac is the same. The ocean is still the same. But it was very, very lonely out there. I mean, you would be racing on your own all the time. Only motorcycles and camera vehicles would. That was the only thing you would see. The swim, of course, was already quite massive. We started with 1,500 people, which is quite a lot of people to be swimming with. And it hasn't increased that much. Now it's 2,500. So it's basically, as a swimmer, you wouldn't feel very different to that, but the level has gone so much up. At that time, you were by yourself all the time, and now you are among a big bunch of people all the time, unless you are the top pro guys, but even them, they on the bike, they still stay in a bunch. Another thing is the bicycles and the whole aerodynamics were so different. It's just hilarious if you see the bikes from those days. We had five 5 gears on the sprocket. So 10 speed bikes. No aero bars. The cables were just hanging loose on top of the brakes. No helmets. The clothing we wore were just singlets and flapping shirts. No special food for sports drinks, so we had to do with dried fruits and bananas to get our energy. So it was a big difference, yeah. and the most important thing is it was unknown what it would do to your body. It's it was like an experiment with the how far you can push a human body in distance wise. So for me, it was a big adventure.
I love hearing about the gear, and as you rightly say, obviously the way the sport has grown, the level of competition has increased. But do you think the guys today have got it easy talking about the gear and what you guys had to go through?
No, of course not, because the level has been is just killing. I mean, if you had to start now, if I would start on the level I was on in those years, I would be completely anonymous, and nobody wouldn't pay any notice of me. And in those years, I was an instant star. I mean, I was hanging out with the big four, I had interviews, I had sponsorships. It was a lot easier to get into the publicity. And to get into the top of the field, and from there you would develop automatically because you would share information with the guys, and that was something that made it quite nostalgic and quite romantic because we needed each other to share the knowledge. I was starting from scratch, and I learned so much from all the other athletes that I was racing with, the successful ones, of course, also, but also the ones that had bad races or had injuries. I asked everyone as much as I could to learn how to train, how to prevent injuries, how to get in shape and to improve.
Rob, how long did you race as a professional for?
Those first 2 years were really amateuristic, from 82, 83. I didn't even own a racing bike. I borrowed the bike just a week before the events, and then I could train a little bit on it and then race on the borrowed bike and then hand it back over again. But then from 84, I got a sponsor contract, and I raced professional until 2000 in the Olympics. The sport came quite late in my career. I was already 24 when I did my first race. I was 26 when I got a pro contract. And so I got over my peak around mid 90s, but then all of a sudden the Olympics it became an Olympic sport, and I thought, well, I have been in the first world championships, in the first national championships, in the first European championships. I've been all in all these highlights of our sport. I thought it would be great to be also in the first Olympics. And so I extended my career, and I luckily qualified when I was 42 to race in Sydney, and that was great.
It must have been an amazing experience. But you returned to the Big Island in Kona after a long, long break. Tell me a little bit about the thought process there. What brought you back?
I went back in 2003 after I retired from professional sports, and I still enjoyed racing a lot. I thought that would be the last time I was in Ironman, because I had no ambition to become a age group winner. After all the pro years, I thought that this would be more for other people who missed out on a professional career to do age group racing. So I just raced mountain bike races. I did some Xterra races and small races in Holland to stay fit and to enjoy the sport. Then I got an invitation from my old colleague from Hungary, Peter Kropko, to race in his race, the 70.3 race in Budapest. It was a beautiful race. It's such a nice city to race in, and so I took the invitation, did the race with my wife without any special preparation, and I finished 25th from in the whole professional field. So I thought, well, this is great. I mean, I did with hardly any training. I still have the efficiency to race long distance racing, and next year I will be 60. So I thought maybe I could do another Ironman. So I started thinking about it, talked to my wife about it, and slowly it started to shape, to get shape. I by the end of 2016, I decided to go for it. And try my new age group in Kona. So I had to qualify. I took Nice as my favorite race. This was also a classic race in Europe, and I hadn't been there for 20 years. And I thought it would be great to qualify in that race, which I had so many successes and battles with Mark Allen. And I qualified with a lead of 2 hours and 40 minutes over the second guy in my age group. So that gave me a big boost to also set the standard high for Kona.
I love that. And your performance on the Big Island in 2017 was phenomenal. I mean, your margin of victory wasn't as big as in Nice, but it was at the World Championships, and at that sort of level, it was also pretty decent. I mean, 45-odd minutes or 47-odd minutes. You must be pretty happy with that performance. Dipping under 10 hours, as you say, you in a new age group, 60 to 64, that's a phenomenal performance.
Yeah, well, I was very happy with that. Of course, I trained very seriously for this year. Like the year before, everything was just done with my normal routine of maybe 10, 12 hours training a week, one session a day. But for 2017, I really doubled that. I trained almost every week, 20 hours, like I was a pro. And I really hope to do a good race, but you never know. You can get injured. You have mechanical problems. It's a very unpredictable race. And so I was a little bit nervous, but when it all comes together on that day, that is really a great feeling.
Now that you've done it, obviously there was a lot of consideration that went into considering doing it. Are there going to be more as the bug bitten again? I think once you are a competitor and you get that in your blood, it's difficult to get it out. After such a long break, are you going to keep going back?
Well, I'm still competing. I do run races. I do mountain bike races. I do national level triathlons. But the big races, I mean, it's as a pro, I didn't have to worry about money. Every race I did would generate income, and no costs. And now it's the other way around. It takes away from my normal job, which is coaching, and it costs a lot of money to do Hawaii. So I think I let it simmer for a couple of years now, and and see how long my my course record will stand. If it's gone, it's gone. It was a nice bonus to have that, but it's hard to keep it for a long time because the sport develops so fast.
Were you surprised? Obviously, you've kept an eye on things from afar over the years, but were you surprised at how much that race has grown? I mean, like you said, in the early days, you were out there and it was very lonely. There are patches on that route that are sort of where you're on your own, but it's changed a lot in the last sort of decade or two, hasn't it?
Yes, yeah. It's the challenge now is not to be with somebody, but without somebody, because if you're not really really careful, you get penalties without knowing it, and this is a really big problem for Ironman, and it's not the size of the race; it's just the quality of the field is just so tremendously big. If you see the bicycles, how much money is in there? It's just millions and millions of dollars are brought on and brought into the island to do this race, and it's very impressive.
Looking back at your triathlon career, what are you most proud of?
Most proud I am of my whole career as being able to race still at a competitive level when I'm 60, and I still feel really fit and healthy. Performance-wise, I think the World Championship title in Nice in 1994 was the biggest highlight of my career. It's the only world title I have as a pro, I'm really proud of that. Even more because it was at an age of 36, which is quite old for competitive sports. And next to that, it will be qualifying for the Olympics. I didn't have a good race. I finished 42nd. Or 43rd, I don't know, something like that, out of 55, which is not something to be really proud of, but I'm so proud to have been able to qualify, and at that age, it was a tremendous farewell to my life as a traveling pro. This was a great life for 15 years, and this was a perfect end of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Top it off in Olympic Games. You can't beat that unless you pick up a medal at the Olympics, I guess. But just being there is incredible. Yeah. Rob, what do you think is the biggest challenge facing the sport of triathlon today?
I think This was the same for all the years, all the whole history of triathlon, is to stay motivated and to stay healthy, because it is a sport that takes a lot out of you. It takes a lot of dedication to choose this sport. You cannot do it just because of results or performances. You really need to be in love with the sport, and then the next problem is to stay healthy and not get injured, because it's very tempting to do more and more and more, and your body you have to listen to your body to rest, to recover at sometimes.
Rob, we all get to a point, some of us sooner than others, where we start feeling the effects of aging and catching up to us. I'm guessing that there are parts of your sort of athletic performance that are not as good as they were in your prime. How do you deal with that? What's the secret to longevity as you get older?
I think it's just accepting it that you get slower and more. It's more and more important to listen to your body. As I was preparing for Kona and did that much more mileage and that much more training, I felt that it was not possible to train as hard and as much as I did in the early years. I lost weight, I lost energy, I just needed to focus on my intensity of training and to focus on my recovery much more than I did before. And this is a process that's been going on for maybe the last 20 years. And I know that the secret is that I have no problem of not training for a couple of days if it's necessary to become better for the next month or next year. So this has been all through my career, but for the last 10, 15 years, it's getting more and more important.
Rob, it's quite weird that here on the podcast, I chat to a lot of particularly the sort of 18 to 24s and 25 to 29 age groupers who perform pretty well in Kona and then decide that they're going to turn pro. And I think probably the biggest name that's done that, who we've spoken to here on the podcast, is Lucy Charles, who finished second in the ladies' race in 2017. Yeah. But I haven't spoken to many athletes in your position who've raced pro and then sort of gone into the age group ranks. Do you think we're going to see more and more of that as we go further into the future and there are more professionals that have been around? And do you think ex-pros are going to race late into their lives as you are?
Actually, I think it's going to be less. It's going to be less because when I started the sport, I had no ambition and no dreams of becoming a pro. So I came into the sport just because I needed something to do with my life. and I love this sport. And then later on, I found out that I could make a living out of it. When I came to the end of my professional career, I just remembered this beginning, and I wanted to get back that feeling which drew me into the sport. But I think nowadays professionals are. The professional life is so much more harder, so much more difficult, and there is no room for experimenting and no room for slow development. You have to be at your peak right from the start, and this makes it more harder to realize the beauty and the romance of the sport. And I think that's why. Nowadays, professionals will quit and do something completely different instead of keeping racing. But there's still a lot of pros that I am in touch with, and they still love racing and training and coaching, and that keeps them fit. But to compete as a age group, it's something that be a little bit crazy to do that.
Have you got a newfound respect for age groupers, having raced professional where that's what you did for a living, and seen what thousands of these athletes around the world are doing, where they've got wives and husbands, they've got children, they've got jobs? You must have seen a very different side of the sport now, racing it competitively as an age grouper, as to being a professional.
Well, I never underestimated the effort of age groupers, and I always had good friends and good contacts with age groupers. I think triathlon is a great sport for that, because we are all in the same race in cycling and professional athletics and soccer. Almost all professional sports, there is a big separation between professional and age group and amateurs. In triathlon, we all do the same race. We start on the same start line, and we are in the same transition zone. So we have this contact all the time, and I always enjoyed this interaction, and also benefited from it, because even age groupers, they have experiences, they have theories about training, about nutrition, about equipment. So no, I always enjoyed being around with age groupers, but now even more.
I'm sure. Well, Rob, it's been great catching up with you. I look forward to talking about the individual disciplines, the swim, the bike, the run, and also touching on your nutrition. But we'll save that for another episode of the Kone Edge. Thanks for your time today.
Okay. Thank you, Brad.
This episode of the Kone Edge is brought to you by the Wahoo Kicker. Whether you're looking for the accuracy and control of a direct drive bike trainer or the flexibility and convenience of a wheel-on solution, Kicker and Kicker Snap are two distinct indoor training solutions. Kicker Indoor Trainer's large flywheel uses new algorithms to improve responsiveness and better replicate the sensation of riding on the road. So whether free riding or using online platforms like Zwift and TrainerRoad, you'll have the same experience you feel on your favorite outdoor rides. To check out their phenomenal range, head over to thekoneedge.com/indoor. That's thekoneedge.com/indoor. Thank you to Rob for sharing his story with us today here on the Kone Edge. What an incredible guy. What a cool story. And we're going to be talking about his swim next time out here on the podcast and some of the things he's done to improve. And not next time out, next week rather. Next week, Thursday, is when that is happening. So make sure you download the podcast. Hit the subscribe button in your favorite podcast player so you don't miss an episode. I mentioned at the start of today's podcast that I've been working on something that I'm pretty excited about. I still can't give you all the details, but it moved along really quickly today. So I am so amped. If you want to find out more about it, you need to keep an eye on our Facebook page, okay? Head over to thekoneedge.com/Facebook, and it'll take you straight to the page. Make sure you like it and hit the follow button as well. And all will be revealed there over the next few days and weeks. So make sure you go check it out. That's thekoneedge.com/Facebook. And yeah, just a quick one. I'm not feeling the love. Haven't had an iTunes review in over a week. What's going on? If you haven't left us one yet, please do. I'm starting to think the iTunes is broken. But yeah, if you haven't left us one yet, please do. It only takes a couple of minutes. If you listen to the podcast on an Apple device through the native podcast player, you can do it straight in there, or simply head over to iTunes, search for the Kone Edge, and then hit leave a rating and a review. Like I said, only takes a couple of minutes, and it really helps us. It boosts our numbers. And talking of those numbers, I mentioned at the start of the year that I've got a big goal for the Kone Edge this year from a downloads perspective. Chasing 1 million downloads of the podcast this year, and we are right on track. So January we did over 100,000, February we've done over 100,000, and as it stands right now, as we head towards the middle point of March, we are on track to do over 100,000 in March as well. So thank you so much for being a subscriber and being part of the Kone Edge community. Head over to thekoneedge.com/Facebook to get all the details of what we're up to.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Kone Edge. Don't forget to connect with us on social media. Simply search for the Kone Edge.